Ladies and gentlemen, fellow slaves of the plantation, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinny Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinny's jokes. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for the listening joygasms of the intelligence agencies that are tasked to listen to the show. Thank you very much for joining us too. And my very special guest with me today is David Rodriguez. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, great to be with you, Vinny.
All right. So would you tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
So I am someone who is in business with John Taylor Gatto, the author of The Underground History of American Education. And I just came across his work and how important it is because I went through 12 years of public education, like many of your listeners, and found out that the key crutch of it is mandatory attendance policies. And so I started an expo called the Education Options Expo, in which I invite speakers and respectful models of learning, schools, academies to come promote their school and their organization. At the same time, having speakers come, because almost everyone that I speak to, maybe perhaps your audience too, realizes there's something wrong with schools, not just in my country, but your country, all around the world, and they don't know what it is. And so once you find out some of the depths of it, I wanted to be part of the solution to that, so I started this expo. I'm also the publisher with John Taylor Gatto on his book, The Underground History, with Ron Paul as a foreword, Richard Grove as an afterword, and David Ruenzel as an introduction. And I'm also writing a book about apprenticeships myself. And so the quest that I'm on is to liberate these young people from this forced schooling model because of its disrespect, because of the long-term ramifications that it has on the human mind, and then also how it affects societal problems. So that's kind of a little bit about myself and why we're speaking today, I think.
Well, that's good. Education is pretty much going downhill pretty badly. And as evidence, I'd reference that a lot of people think of John Taylor Gatto as some kind of dessert. Now, I do believe, on the other hand, that it is actually quite easy to understand education. But you need to study government mind control institutions like MKUltra and cult indoctrination like the Manson family. And then suddenly, education is no longer confusing because it's cult indoctrination and mind control. And only that.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I mean, indoctrination is to indoctrinate, take a doctrine, and in the state schools, they are taking state worship. And so naturally, any organization that's going to be teaching kids is going to promote their values, their attitudes, and their benefits. Whereas the word education actually means to draw from within, to draw out. And so the great thinkers of our time, like Buckminster Fuller, said that each child is a born genius, and the challenge is that they get de-genius trying to please their teachers and please their parents. And John Gatto also said that genius is as common as dirt. And myself, I would say that every person is brilliant in their own way and genius perhaps. And so it's a matter of educating oneself to draw out that genius, that brilliance, and then put it into a service or a product or some type of profession that benefits other people. Whereas the state school is about memorization and faith based on nothing except ideas at a young age, your pledge and allegiance to a country that has been taken over and is no longer what it stood for, 200 plus years ago.
See, when I went to school, I could already speak English and do basic maths. And then when I left school, I found that none of the things that they taught me while I was there for like 10 to 15, 17 years was of any benefit to me because I already knew basic maths and basic English were the only thing I utilized after school that school taught me anything about.
Very common. Yeah, we learn so much before the age of 6 and 7. And so the common fear is, well, how are my kids going to learn to read, write, and do math? Well, they're doing that beforehand, and you don't even need those things unless your career determines that as you decide that in your teens or early 20s and things like that. So, the most important thing is human imagination, human creativity, people skills, speaking skills, communication skills, and these are all initially learned at a young age. And then once you're told to sit in a classroom and you have to raise your hand to speak, you got to raise your hand to go to the bathroom, you have to get permission for everything that you do, what's actually the students are learning is their degree of obedience. Can they obey? Can they memorize versus actual critical thinking? Because the kid who always, quote, got in trouble was the kid who's asking, why are we doing this? That's a question. If you want to, you know, upset the whole teacher and principal, because when you ask them that question, they don't even know why they're doing it. They're doing it because they get a paycheck. And hey, God bless those people. I have family members who are retired teachers, principals currently, teachers. So there's great people, loving, kind people in the system. But when you're in a system that mandates attendance, you know the roots are rotten. And so whatever's going to be implemented and learned is not going to be something of respect. And so that's a critical part for every parent to know.
Mm. I had a joke about that, actually. You know why the government had to close down all of its schools?
How come?
They didn't have any principals.
I like that one. Nice.
And there's one more before. Why the Cyclops have to close down his school?
How come?
And he had one pupil.
Right, you can't pay the bills with one pupil. You need at least 25 or 40, right, to get the money from the government.
Indeed. And now, the education system, of course, we all grow up with this. And I think that a lot of the things that we grow up with, especially when we're young, we're not quite at the adult level of being able to question and or challenge, right? Now, a friend of mine, he went to his kid's school in Christchurch down here, right? And he told his son, don't let the dental nurse give you fluoride, all right? Don't let the dental nurse put fluoride in your mouth. The son knew it, anything like that, but they just did it anyway, even though the son was saying, no, 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 no. And it's because when you're a kid, you don't have the ability to fight back against an adult and say, no, this is my life, this is my body, go away. And they don't have the rights that adults have, or at the very least, they don't know what their rights are, because a lot of their parents don't either. And that's probably why they send them to public school.
Right. Yeah, no, it's I think the key principles is learning that you own yourself. And I think if young people can learn this at a young age, and I've seen some of the parents out there who are practicing what's called peaceful parenting or unschooling, and they educate their kids about that. Like, this is your body. I've seen one of my friends. She has a 5-year-old boy, and she's explaining this to her also, or himself. And she has like a voluntarist, freedom, libertarian type mindset. So rather than just, you know, picking up your kid and hauling him wherever you want to go, she says, can I pick you up? Right? Is it okay? And so when you start respecting the person, like, for example, I wouldn't just pick you up, or you wouldn't pick up some person. You would say, can I hug you? Can I pick you up? So at a young age, this 5-year-old boy is learning that, oh, this is my body. So she was telling a story where somebody was going to pick up her son. And the son was like, I don't want to be picked up. And the parent was so shocked because the 5-year-old boy is asserting his rights. And they can learn this at a young age. So what I would encourage parents to do is, educate them about that, because it does start at that age. And young people, what Gatto says is that childhood is over at age 7. So if you you start treating your kids like a kid when they're 8, 9, 10, he said they're going to have longer problems as they grow older, because back in the day, you're on the farm, you got to add value to the farm. You got to pick up, you got to go do some work. So he calls the artificial extension of childhood. So you have people who are 25, 28, maybe 30, still acting like a child, and that's by design through the school system.
And I would also say that those in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, which actually, incidentally, is the exact same age range that currently is makes up the majority of politicians, CEOs, and the biggest lawyers and things like that. Their 60s, 70s, and 80s. These are the people that are in control of society, nearly 100-year-old children.
right. The corporations love it because these childlike people have no sales resistance. They have no ability to reject what they're selling them. You can sell them any type of product or service. And once you can actually say no to the products, although they have a beautiful woman, a beautiful man on the screen, and they keep, you know, drilling this into your head, you can say, oh, they actually have financial interest in me, and that's why they're putting this little image up there versus like, oh, that's what that product does. And you can think critically about what they're trying to sell you. So, yeah, when you have kids or kid-like minds when you're an adult, then you just believe what the state tells you. You believe what CNN and the news channels tell you versus thinking, what is their interest? Why would they say that, right? Do they have any interest in the game here, any matter, any financial interest? So it's
something that I've never heard a single adult New Zealander ever say. You know, why this? Why that? Why? You know, just they don't. This questioning. What's that? Oh my God! The frustration of a lot of people like us who are actually aware and have grown into adults through really, really not wanting to be children anymore because we can see and compare ourselves to others, right? It's the reason we became adults primarily. The school didn't make us into adults. We made ourselves into adults because we realized that everybody else was acting like a child. And now we've got a whole bunch of people in the so-called alternative media who are still children, intellectually speaking, trying to talk to everybody else like they're the adult and everybody else is the child. And I think that's another one of those signs of immaturity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you got to respect human life. I think that's the deal. You know, no matter what someone's view is, if you see other person as a human being and the value that you put on your own life, then, you know, you'll, the benefit of this communication device and even America when it started was that you could actually have debates. You could actually argue without having your head chopped off, you know, back in the days of the monarch and these types of things. So that's what the state and these, you know, deep state operations are attacking is free speech and the political correctness. If you probably noticed that we're like, you got to tiptoe around, you don't want to offend people. But I think as long as we're being respectful of them, the debate is on, you know, and so they're going to try to, you know, control the communication and the minds of people to so that they can't speak freely. But the truth is that this type of conversation, we're having a conversation, but other people want to have debate. It's fine. It's great to have arguments and debates because now you can refine the ideas. You can get down to the bottom line truth if it exists in that particular case versus just accepting things as they are and let the state and the politicians and these huge organizations and agencies behind the state lead us off a cliff onto global government and more war, more pain and suffering.
One thing that struck me is this: is that the word argument is now a dirty word. All right, it's a wrong word. You know, you're not allowed to have those because that's aggressive. That's too bad. That's negative. Whereas if you look up the definition of an argument, it's two people who, with honesty and respect, share their differing opinions and ideas and evidence with an open mind. Does that sound like something negative? It does if you're a mind-controlling sociopath. which is the vast majority of control systems, and that's just basically how it works. It's trying to foster that psychopathic, narcissistic mindset. And these disorders are plagued by, surprisingly enough, underdeveloped brains as children. So you've got children who grow up in a violent or unloving environment. They're not taught to respect themselves. In fact, they're taught over a long period of time that they don't have any power, that they can't protect themselves from their violent parents and so on and so forth. So that when they grow up, they become incredibly violent and aggressive and things like that, and manipulative, because they recognized, and I think that their self-preservation mechanism kicked in too early a time, and it channeled their brain development into the reptilian brain and didn't allow them to develop their mammal brain, which deals with emotion, and their analytical brain, the neocortex, which deals with logic and facts and evidence. So you've got somebody who's a hyper predator, essentially, without any maturity or so much of experience of love and caring about other people. And in fact, what they crave is power, so that they don't get put into a powerless position again. Now, if that's the mindset, that predatory self-defensive mechanism that winds up being in charge, those kind of people raise their children to wind up being exactly like them. So I believe that being raised by the state will turn you into a narcissistic person, and to a large degree, or it'd have a very high probability of it turning out to that way and developing certain traits and things like that. This selfishness, this untogetherness, this I'm better than everybody else-ness kind of thing. And I remember something the Greek told me. He said, the most degrading thing you can do to a child is give them a grade.
Yeah, well, because grades are irrelevant. I mean, when was the last time anybody ever asked you for your grades? In the U.S., they have an SAT, Standardized Achievement Test, and because these are things which we're told are important for 12 years, and you got to have high grades. You want to go to college, and your GPA matters. When in reality, those things don't matter. And what matters is performance. What matters is your ability to work with people. And so when you're applying for a job or a position, you might put that on the resume, but that's not what they're looking at. In fact, there's videos of Gatto online where he talks about what Harvard and Princeton look for on their admissions departments. And here's what they look for. They look for a record of distinction or a track record of performance. Because when they're getting all these applications coming into their university, they see plenty of 4.2s or, you know, very high GPAs, valedictorians, you know, the top GPA in the school. But they don't want somebody who's just going to conform. They don't want somebody who's the same. What these universities are looking for are unique, original thinkers, because those are the people who go on to achieve great things in life. And so what he talks about is they look for people who are going to be famous and people who are going to be wealthy, because as you become famous and wealthy, now you're in the spotlight. And so if they can recognize, oh, this is a young person, age 14 or 16 or whatever, how old the applicant is, say, oh, they're going to rise with or without our school. Let's put our brand on them. And then when they graduate and they go and become successful, the onlookers will say, wow, where did you go to school? Harvard or Stanford or Princeton? Wow, that must be a good school. When in reality, you already applied to that school when you had all the skills, abilities, and talents to become a star. So you could have went to some podunk university, and you still would have become a really successful person. And so there's all these little secrets about the real world and what getting into college is about and what these universities look for. And it's mind-blowing, actually. It's like the up is down and down is left, or down is up, right is left is right, and it's backwards. And so this is the process, and this is what's in the book. You know, he talks about his 30 years in the classroom. He got State Teacher of the Year, and he just said, you know, something strange going on here. What are we a part of? And he found out that this institution was imported from Prussia, Germany in the 1800s for the benefit of soldiers. Well, I should say the generals, to the detriment of soldiers, because they lost a battle, and all the generals and the leaders got together and said, man, why did we lose that battle? He said, because when we commanded our soldiers to march into the bullets, they actually didn't. They went all different ways, and they fled for their life, like you and I probably would. They said, man, we got to do something. And so that's when they started coming up with the idea of forcing indoctrination and drilling, so that when you're given a command, you don't think about it. You just walk into the bullets. Or in society, you just follow along what the state tells you to do.
And about 20 to 30 years later, the Great War happened. What was the Great War mostly known for? A whole bunch of people being ordered to go up over trenches into machine gun fire without question. I wonder if there's a frickin' connection here. You know, it was just it was the Prussia-Franco War that really signified everything. Prussia had instituted, I think, maybe it was only about 10, 15 years before that war between them and France. This is pre-Germany, ladies and gentlemen. And the Prussian troops rolled into France, nailed them, hardcore. Just, they didn't even see it coming. They're like, sacre bleu, you know, like, and then all the rest of the countries around the world just go, wow. these Prussians certainly managed to brainwash their kids incredibly well so that they would just go in and follow orders and kill anybody we told them to. And they wouldn't question us either because we beat them out of that as a child as well. This could actually be quite working well for us. So when the United States started opening up its first public schools, it was a hell of a lot of resistance. They had to call the cavalry, literally. Literally calling the cavalry, men on horseback with ropes, to snag children from their parents, to drag them to school. This is how public institutions really started. And when you look at just the origins of something, you realize not only has it not gotten any better, but the state's proclivity to destroy creativity, the ability to question, and more to the point, be an individual at all, has only gotten worse. And we're now living in a society that they've built. And those of us who do know how to think because our parents told us, do know how to feel because we know what it's like to suffer, we are not only a minority, but we're considered to be conspiracy theorists. We're considered less than human, less than sane.
I don't feel that way. I mean, I think, you know, everybody has their own opinion about someone who seeks for truth, and all these funny labels doesn't change the reality that, hey, there's been false flag events. There's been a change in history. I mean, as soon as recent as 2004, you had candidate Bush and candidate John Kerry running for president in the United States. These guys were fraternity brothers at Skull and Bones fraternity at Yale. So that doesn't change the fact. So I'm not concerned with what other people think about me or the labels that they put onto. All I want is truth. And the fact is that we spend 12 years inside of a school system and school season is about to start. So that's 50 million kids in the U.S. And by some estimations, that's 700 million kids worldwide, not being asked what they want to learn, but saying, here's what you need to learn in order to be successful. And the fact is that's just false. You know, this is something that Peter Gray said, one of the co-founders of the Alliance for Self-Directed Education. This school, forced schooling, is equal to or greater than the civil rights movement in the 60s, because we're violating the most innocent people in our society by mandating them be inside a building and tell them, you know, give them all the stress. I don't know if you remember have any stress taking tests, or if some of your buddies did. Like, some people really worry about this stuff. And you find out later, nobody cares about your grades. You know, it's not what it's about. And so I find that very disrespectful. And now with the implement of these pharmaceutical drugs, they're giving them all this Ritalin and Zoloft and all this other stuff. Because if you're a 10-year-old boy and you can't sit down for 8 hours, then there's something wrong with you. And that's just terrible to even think is how far we've gotten as a society. And now in California and I think West Virginia, they're mandating vaccines in order to go to public school. So this is the progression for the removal of the rights of parents. And of course, people are, you know, believing it in general, but there's an awakening happening. So I'm pretty hopeful about the new things that are arising and the internet and these types of shows that you've been doing really well at. And I thank you for that. And there's documentaries out there called Vaxxed. There's a film called Class Dismissed, which is great. There's a movie about the Summerhill schools called, well, Summerhill 2008. I mean, there's solutions that exist now. And so I would just encourage parents to search some of those resources, or you can find me on the internet. You can find John Taylor Gatto in a bunch of other places. Education Options TV is a YouTube channel there to help parents learn about these different options. But here's where I don't have any hope. Reform, political reform with the school system, going in there trying to ask permission from these politicians. Hey, would you guys please change? Come on, just change for us. It's so far beyond that now that parents need to get together with three or four of their friends and be like, hey guys, yeah, this is pretty bad. It's not just bad curriculum, although it is, but it's forcing our kids to either get vaccines, which is terrible. And you have, of course, the bad policy of mandatory attendance. And I would encourage your viewers and listeners to think about, is there any other organization that mandates you be in a location under threat of fines or imprisonment. Because in California, they can fine you up to $2,000 or put you in jail for a year for three unexcused absences. And that's according to the California Education Code. So it's so beyond begging politicians. It's about taking a look at your face in the mirror, mom and dad and uncle, auntie, and say, you know what? If my kid's going to become educated, then I'm going to have to help facilitate that and guide them. You don't have to become a teacher and jack of all trades and, you know, science, engineering, math. You don't have to do all that now with the internet and even libraries in general, but you do got to start asking questions. So rather than trying to download all your wisdom and knowledge, which I'm sure you have, you want to start asking questions and facilitate their interests and their passions, because a great man said, education is not the filling of a pail, but it's the lighting of a fire. And you want to light that fire for your kids and let them carry on with their life successfully.
It's problematic doing so, of course, because since the advent of Rockefeller and CIA-financed feminism, we now don't have women in the house to take care of them and things like that. And my wife was looking into this just the other day, and she said what's an interesting advent of feminism and women going into the workforce is the health of the population started to decline massively as the amount of processed foods started to increase in consumption because the women didn't have the time to cook their family meals anymore. Right? Now, it's interesting to note as well that poor nutrition is one of the signs of cult indoctrination. What kind of food can you access at school? Good food or crap food all the time? Crap food all the time. Poor nutrition. Oh, okay. Repetition. Another sign of cult indoctrination is mind control. Do you have to repeat and memorize things? Oh, you do, you do. Central authority figure with a claim of truth. This is our truth. It's the only truth. That's another cult indoctrination technique. So is that in there? And one that I found particularly interesting, bro. Fluorescent lighting. It's not too dark and not too bright. It stops the brain from being too alert, and it stops it from going to sleep at the same time. It brings it into sort of like a beta wave state where you're a lot more suggestible. And one of the other elements was, and I'm sure I really experienced this, and a lot of kids did too, getting teased for being different from everybody else, where in actual fact, that is the only thing that you did of value during school, is resist them wanting to turn you into something other than yourself. And that is why they attack you. And milieu control, this other one that I thought was very interesting. Not only is our truth the only truth, and we've got a central authority figure and a whole bunch of your friends that'll give you crap if you don't accept that one truth, we've got control over your information too, so that your ability to question that and get information from other sources is also prevented from the cult. Now, one thing that happens to cult members, which I find particularly interesting, is that they lose their sense of humor. You know? Now, everybody laughs when I say that because it's so funny to think that you could become a cultist, become indoctrinated, and one of the big major signs of it is that you don't find things funny anymore. You can't have a laugh about it. You can't join dots. You can't enjoy absurdity. And I think that Monty Python, when they came out, it was absolute absurdity. And one of the things John Cleese said, the reason why they did their comedy is because they, as boys, felt that there was a lack of grown men being silly.
Yeah, I agree. Comedy is a great, great tool for getting out the truth and having a great laugh and or having a great dive into the truth, like George Carlin did and Bill Hicks. And I think, who was the gentleman down your way?
Steve Hughes.
Wow, what a genius. So I would like to see more comedians come out and speak about these types of things, because it lightens it up. And when we actually look at the numbers, the people far outnumber these controllers. And so, yeah, I would love to see more comedy and humor directed at the state, at these agencies of power, because it's total mind control. And once we can break through that, and a lot of it is through laughter, and realize, yeah, they're just people. They're not some superior race of, you know, another species. They're just humans, and they're trying to control and run our lives. And once we realize that, you know, we're quite empowered.
Well, I got to sort of disagree with you there about whether or not these people are just people or whether or not they're just human. I believe that people have been operating under a delusion for a long, long time that we're the apex predator, that there is no predator that preys upon us. And I don't think that's true. I just think that the apex predators look human, but they don't act like it, right? They're the ones that are not preyed upon by any other creature. Psychopaths, right? Creatures without conscience or creativity. People who can sleep at night easily, despite the horrible things that they do, because they don't have a conscience to keep them up, like we do. Right? And that's the problem with people who have a conscience to a large degree, is we falsely believe that everybody's like us. But unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, there are people in this world who do not think like you do, and they absolutely do not care about you. Right? And this is another thing, and I'd like to get your take on that. How can you tell a child about a predator like a psychopath and get them to understand it so that when they see it, when they hear it, they know to run from it? They know to go, yeah, yeah, of course, of course, of course, and then walk the other way going, that guy's a psychopath, never again. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, because I was having a conversation with a mate of mine, and he says, oh, it's so hard waking up to the New World Order, how there's this Illuminati and the mind control and stuff, bro. And I was like, well, you know, maybe if you were a kid and your daddy sat you down and you say, look, Jimmy, the world's run by ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery, and they're trying to try and brainwash you and enslave you and eventually exterminate you. Okay, enjoy your meal. You know, if it had been come across from early in our life, and it was like nothing new, right? Would we have had that traumatic wake-up experience that so many of us have had when the lies and the trauma and the things of that nature that we've endured for so long suddenly get realized for what they are?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I don't know how you teach kids to identify psychopaths and, you know, what to do about it. Even how do you identify psychopaths? You know, I guess people without feelings and emotions, but it's interesting because they're just humans, but yeah, maybe there is some demonic forces or off earth forces. I don't know. I'd realize
something, whatever it is, yeah, it's something that's not human, not strictly in the sense of the word.
Yeah. You know, I think in the last 15 years, I think over 1 million Iraqis have been killed in, you know, under the U.S. Spreading democracy and freedom, and, you know, tens of thousands of American soldiers, and, you know, up to the point where now veterans in the U.S. are taking their own life. Suicide, over 22 a day are committing suicide. So, yeah, the people who are behind it, I think maybe it's like how a farmer would look at cattle and how they just, you know, they're not conspiring against the cattle. They just see the cattle as a resource for their benefit. And so according to Darwin or even the eugenics of Francis Galton, some people are just better. So that's what he said. I don't believe that. But so if you actually believe that some races or some people are better than other people in terms of their human worth or human value, then you can easily justify doing these heinous things because they're inferior, right? So I'm doing them a favor, or, you know, they're not valuable. And I think that's the idea that has to be shared with people. And And even like celebrity worship, you know, I used to be really starstruck by certain people, and like I just admire them, and I admire people. But now with them, when I'm around them or close to them, I'm not impressed by them because they're humans, and maybe they're talented in whatever they do, an athlete, a musician, or whatever they do. But they're just like me. You know, they got to put their pants on one leg at a time and their shoe on the same thigh. So it's like when that realization comes to the person in terms of self-esteem, self-worth, self-confidence, even self-liking or self-love, then you become empowered. And yeah, of course, you know, I don't know how many psychopaths are around, you know, in the world, but I'm sure many of them are in political office and, you know, running the central banks and perhaps even in the military, having people get killed. But some people are just fervent believers in what they do. You know, they really believe in, you know, the state and, you know, America and these things, because the propaganda is pretty good, you know. And so this is why I think people should, you know, take a look at the book Propaganda, not by Ivy Lee, but by who is the person that talks about propaganda? Anyways, back in the 20s,
I've got an answer to that. Edward Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And in fact, me and a friend of mine just had a conversation about this yesterday. That's the reason why a lot of people think and act the way that they do. So to be angry at people for thinking and acting the way that they were trained, like a dog, to do is really it's dehumanizing, essentially. And unfortunately, the education system's gotten so bad that most people think Bernays is a kind of salad dressing.
Sure, exactly. And I think it's he's the one who said most of your values, opinions, and ideas have been given to you by people who you don't even know exist. And he said that back in the 20s. So imagine now. Imagine how advanced the techniques are. And these celebrities and these people who are in the spotlight, many of them don't understand this, right? Because it takes some research to go down and actually learn about this type of stuff. So they don't realize they are either have handlers with the CIA or they have handlers with these organizations and control mechanisms. And it's, you know, they got to paint it as something good and useful and, you know, humane. But they're being used for huge corporations. And even the story that really is unbelievable is the Pat Tillman story. I don't know if you heard about this guy. He was a famous NFL football player, and his brother, this is in 2003, his brother volunteered to go fight in Iraq. And so he left his multi-million-dollar contract, and then he also flew to Iraq with his brother. Let's go get the terrorists, right, who bombed us on 9/11. Well, long story short, he's over there, and he's writing letters back to his family and saying, hey, this war is a scam. Right. And his opinion shifted from being a pro-patriot for the, you know, let's go get these terrorists, to somebody who's awake and said, something's going on here. This doesn't look right. Well, because he's a high profile athlete and his tour was about up, he was going to come back and presumably be a anti-war voice. And this is right at the beginning of the war. So that was going to be problematic for the state. Well, he ends up dying mysteriously, and there's a documentary about it where his mom testifies, and basically they said, oh, he was killed storming a hill. And then we find out later, oh, it was friendly fire. And then you find out later there was two bullets in his head, and it was quite suspicious. And it appears that he was killed intentionally for that anti-war stance, which was going to be brought back to the U.S. So when you're high profile, this is why a lot of people in Hollywood are afraid to speak out, because you're supposed to do what you're told. And if not, you know, your life might be at risk. Or if you do what you're told, then there's riches and fame that's going to come your way. So I think what kids need to realize is that their life matters, and they can become a star. They can help get the word out about self-ownership, their life, peace, voluntary relationships, collaboration, because these schools have their own Marxist collectivist type agenda, which is now being pushed through. And it's, I think, better if parents remove their kids, homeschool them, or you can put them in democratic schooling. There's something called agile learning centers. There's a variety of options out there, but if you leave them in the state school system, they're going to have a huge disadvantage, and you might even have a damaged relationship because of that.
Well, why would we sending my kid to a place that they don't want to go every single day, every single week, to do stuff that they don't want to do, forge a bad relationship with me and my child? I mean, it's not like I'm not listening to them.
Yes, yes it is. You're not listening to them.
You know, just the blatant frustration. And it's interesting you talk about anti-war activists, because a lot of them, I was going to say, you know, a lot of anti-war activists are people who've actually been there, actually seen it, actually know what they're frickin' talking about, have actually killed people, all right? And because they have a conscience, they see those people in their dreams every night, okay? Every night. I spoke to a couple of veterans here from New Zealand. One of them is about 89 years old. He killed 47 people in World War II. 47. And he told me it was like spending 47 years in jail, all right? And his young son, who'd been a captain for the New Zealand peacekeepers, went over to Iraq, and his commanding officer got his best friend killed. died in his arms, right? And he says, why do you think we drink all the time? Why do you think we drink every night? It's because once we get to a certain level of drunk, when we pass out, we don't dream. Okay? And that is the reality that all of these veterans are actually dealing with on a daily basis. You want to know why they commit suicide? It ain't necessarily just because they're suffering. It's because the people who give them drugs, all right, give them drugs that say, warning, might cause suicide on the side of them. All right? They're trying to get those veterans to kill themselves. Not only because they could become anti-war activists if they woke up and changed what they were doing and things like that. They could really start making a difference in society. But because they're not given any of that inspiration, they're not given any of that help, they go down the depression cycle, and the only help that they're given is something that will further push them down that cycle. And I think that they're damaging society on a massive, wide scale level with that trauma. Because when you commit suicide, it's not just you that dies. A part of everybody who loves you dies that day as well.
Yeah, if you're thinking about suicide, don't do it. You know, think about the people who love you and, you know, dig into your heart. You know, your life matters. So, yeah, it's so sad because, yeah, taking another human's life, thankfully I've never had to do that and hope I don't, but even in self-defense, you know, it's like violence is the enemy, you know. So, yes, if somebody attacks me, I might have to defend myself, but I don't want to kill people, you know. And so when these young people are going into these military zones, maybe they're 18, 19, 20 years old, I mean, these are college-age kids, and they get deprogrammed in their boot camps. You know, you shave your head and start shouting all these orders and, you know, answers to the drill sergeant. You become somebody you're not. And I couldn't imagine, you know, killing somebody that was innocent, or some of these guys who are commanded to go, you know, shoot up a village or to burn some houses where there's innocent people. And some of the stories you probably heard more than I have, but it's just terrible. You know, these soldiers, there was one soldier who I think he was on 3 or 4 tours, and he came back and he had a girlfriend, and he, like, frequently in the middle of the night, he would be in the corner of the house, you know, in a ball, like thinking he's in the war zone, because they've been such conditioned to be the enemy's coming, the enemy's coming, there's fear. And it's so sad. Long story short, he ended up killing his wife in the middle of the night one night because he thought she was after him, you know. So it's so tragic. And I tell all the people I love, do not join the military. They don't care about you. It's a bigger game. It's a racket. I think General Butler said that, was it 50, 60 years ago? It's about money. And so in a similar way, and not as violent, but in a similar way, the school system is about money too. California alone, their budget is $70 billion. I don't know what it is in the U.S., but it's substantial. And so you got to think about all the people making money, not just the teachers and not just the administrators, but what about the textbook publishers? What about the architects? What about the cafeteria business? What about the bus manufacturers, the gas companies? I mean, there's a huge pipeline of funds being distributed based on these school contracts. So if you want to shake that system from the inside and think that's going to work, I don't think so. School districts get their money primarily based on what's called average daily attendance, and which means you have to be in class. You got to be on the, you know, in your seat to check that you're here. Otherwise, you're a truant. And I mentioned earlier, if you miss 3 days, they can give you fines and jail, because that's how they get their money, right? So just like you're concerned with your money and your listeners are, and we all concerned with our finances, the schools get their money in that fashion. So that's why there's truancy officers, so they can get your kids, take them back from home and put them back in. But the good thing is that there's solutions out there. We're about to launch a website at homeschoolleader.com to help you learn how to homeschool. And you can go on the YouTube channel, learn how to do it for free. You don't even have to, you know, buy anything. You can just go on there and learn. But the main thing is that your kids are innocent. They're looking to you, mom and dad, or a guardian for help. And when you put them into this institution, they're thinking, okay, my mom and dad love me, so they wouldn't put me somewhere that was unsafe. So now it's your job as a mother and a father to say, what's going on in the school system? And let's take, for example, let's say McDonald's was in charge of the school system. what would the school system look like? Well, you'd pledge allegiance to the M flag every morning, and there'd be a picture of the past presidents of the corporation and the current president, and then you'd learn about how healthy and nutritious all these preservatives are to for your body to process. And then what would be the end goal of that school system? To become a lifetime consumer of McDonald's foods. And if you get real lucky, you become an employee of McDonald's. And maybe, you know, start your own business there. So it's like, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. You know, you got to make some money. But understand that corporations have interests. The state have interests. And so do you, mom and dad, and so do I. So what is your interest? You want your kids to be happy. Perhaps you have some values you want to share with them. You have some lessons learned you want to share with them. But by delegating some of the most impressionable years of their life, age 6 to age 18, under the care of strangers, you are telling them by your actions that that is a safe place. And I'm here to tell you right now that's not a safe place, because the curriculum and the habits that they're learning are fatal. Potentially, right? If you're learning to obey orders without critical examination of them, that's a problem, because that's what happened in Nazi Germany. People were putting people in trains, you know, taking them to the gas chambers or wherever they're taking them and saying, hey, I'm just doing my job. You know, I don't make the rules. I just enforce them. And so it's so sad when I see that nowadays people, you know, with like carpool violations or speeding tickets, all these just ridiculous violations. I'm not doing my job, or I don't make the rules. I'm just doing my job. So, parents, do your best to learn about what's going on in there, and then take a step. You know, you can do it. You know, although you might have gone through the public schooling system, now with the internet and these types of programs, you can learn how to empower your child, and you can do it a lot of times for a very low tuition amount.
Mm. Now, it's interesting you bring up the example of McDonald's being the one running our school system, because when I'm driving around and it's school's out time, right? And what happens is, guess what vests these children who are helping the other kids to cross the road wearing? They're wearing McDonald's vests. All right? So they're getting them right there. Like, and the other thing, I watched this movie, The Founder, about Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, right? And he wasn't actually one of the McDonald's brothers who actually created the system and all of that stuff, how to do it. And they were actually quite obsessed with good quality products and no preservatives and not using pre-made thick shakes or anything like that. This guy didn't care. He just took their idea of fast food and thought that he could make money out of it, a con man of 50 years, and then figures out that, hey, instead of selling food, I'll just buy the real estate and lease the restaurants back to the franchisees. That way I can control them, and that way the McDonald's, who I wrote a contract with, no longer have any power over me, because I own the land and therefore I own the restaurants, and they don't have any legal justification. And so those two boys, they got like a $1.35 million each. And then he said, and we also want 1% profits. And they go, no, that's going to be on a handshake basis, right? You have to trust me that I'll give you what you... And of course, these two McDonald's brothers got nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I did see that movie, and there's some major business lessons there. And yeah, handshake deals, unless you know that person and have a history with them, is pretty tough, but... one of my great mentors said, if it's not in black and white in the contract, it doesn't exist. So if you're thinking about starting a business, you definitely want to get that in writing and get it in the contract. And even when it is in a contract, sometimes people will break that contract. So you want to have some conflict resolution clause or some type of way to remedy that situation, because it's just it's an agreement. And so you sign both parties to that agreement. And now off you go. But the school system is not in agreement. It's force. It's mandated by the state. And that's disrespectful. And it's violating your human rights and your kids' human rights.
It baffles the mind today that people don't think that they're slaves. You know, it's like, hey, bro, did you have a choice about whether or not you went to the state programming institution? No. Do you have a choice about, or even consent to give, like, the vast majority of all the money that you earn to the state? No. How are you not a slave again? You have to do exactly what they tell you and give them exactly what they want, and you have no say in it ever. You're a slave.
Right. Right. And what's interesting is that if people convert the financial part of it, I don't know about when you're part of the world, but in the U.S., it's about 30% of your income, maybe 40, maybe up to 50%, but just conservatively, it's called 30%. The math would then be that's 4 months out of the year. So out of the 12-month year, you would be working for the state for 4 months, in effect, how much you're giving them your money. So if you think about a silent partner who takes, you know, 4 months of your life under threat or intimidation, you can start to put it into context. Maybe the state is immoral. Maybe the state is illegitimate, and perhaps society and humanity is going to a new place of awakening and consciousness that voluntary relationships is the answer. And what John Gatto says, if you want to transform the school system, there's only one thing you got to do. Make attendance voluntary, because in 5 years, the schools would have to adjust and maneuver. And then in 10 years, the system would look entirely different, because the whole crutch, the Achilles heel, the whole system is forced attendance policies. So that's why homeschooling is under threat worldwide. And I would encourage you to do that. Get active in your local cities and maybe associations and promote it and get courageous and get bold and realize that the people far outnumber these controllers. And there's a great clip about this model on YouTube called The Tiny Dot by Larkin Rose. That's Tiny Dot, D-O-T. Take a look. See how far we outnumber these people, and then partner up with 3 or 4 or 5 of your buddies or your neighbors and say, we're just going to homeschool our kids. We're going to figure out a way. We're going to do a homeschool co-op, or we're going to start a little private school in our house, or somebody's got a farm. But you can totally do this, and you have to overcome what's called learned helplessness. You were taught as a kid that you needed permission, that you have to get somebody's approval. You might make a mistake, and it might be, you know, that might be wrong. Well, failure is not a bad thing. Failure is actually
feedback. Not to correct you, but that's not actually what causes learned helplessness. Learned helplessness is actually a side effect of complex post-traumatic stress. Post-traumatic stress is when you have one bad thing happen to you. Complex post-traumatic stress is when you complete control over your life is utterly outside of your hands for more than a month. That's where the learned helplessness comes from, because you have absolutely no control of your, over your life when you go into school. You can't go home if you want to. You can't stop the kids from teasing you. If you tell the teacher, they don't do anything, that kind of thing. And it's supposed to bring this complex post-traumatic stress into children, because a lot of the symptoms of complex post-traumatic stress are very similar to those who've suffered cult indoctrination, and actually makes them easier to control. And I think it's a trauma-based mind control institution. Let's not frickin' mince any words here. School is a trauma-based mind controlling institution. If you are sending your child willingly to a trauma-based mind control institution where you know they are going to suffer, where you know that their individuality and their very spirit and the very thing that you love about them is going to be systematically destroyed over time and damage them and their psyche permanently, that's bad parenting, ladies and gentlemen. That's bad parenting, okay? Like, you know, maybe that's just my new agey beliefs. But anyway, David Rodriguez has been my very special guest. Thank you very much for coming on here with me. And ladies and gentlemen, you know that the state propaganda networks and corporate media is not going to tell you this kind of stuff about the education system. So if you want real media to actually tell you the, you know, honest truth that's going to scare the living bejesus out of you, go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and send us $1 a month, $5 a week, $100 right now. You got it? Give it a year. All right? And we guarantee to spend it well, exposing scumbaggery. Thank you very much for your time, and we'll see you after the break.
Hi folks, I'm Vinny Eastwood from the Vinny Eastwood Show, the first and only New Zealander in history to be offered a talk radio show on an American network. For nearly 10 years, I've worked hard to help people's voices be heard, created the largest online archive of protests, public meetings, and long-form interviews with activists in New Zealand history. revealing the hidden and uncomfortable truths of our time that no corporate media will air. On this show, you will hear directly from the activists, journalists, and fringe researchers about every topic and belief structure imaginable. No taboo topics, no fear of doom, and only one rule: have fun. After all, just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point? Thousands of hours of free audio and video content with almost any guest on practically any subject you can imagine is available right now for free. Why? Because people all over the world have been giving me a few dollars a month. Many have been giving $5 a week, others $10 and $20, each according to their means. Some so generous as to donate $100 a month with one specific instruction: just keep doing what you're doing, Vinny. This show has changed and in some cases literally saved lives. There are people who live today who would have taken their own life had it not been for the good humour and mind-blowing conversations with some of the most brilliant people on the planet to remind us that there is a lighter side to genocide, and the only thing worse than the New World Order is the jokes of Vinny Eastwood.